And welcome, my friends, to the Generations Radio broadcast. Kevin Swanson, your host, with you today as we talk about reintegrating the family in the 21st century. The family economy is so important. We have a Family Economics Conference, by the way, coming up in May in just about a month and a half. And I think a deadline for early registration is approaching in just about a week. So you want to go online right now and register if you haven't yet at FamilyEconomics.com. We're talking about bringing the family back into the economy in the 21st century, which means that the family has been very much disintegrated and very, very little opportunity for families to integrate themselves in a corporate-based economy where dad gets in the car and moves off to his company where there's 5,000 other employees working, and he just plays a very, very small part in a very, very big machine. That, my friends, is not very accommodating to the family economy, which, by the way, was extant for about 5,900 years until just the last couple of generations. And it's just been the last couple of generations where you've had a real fall off of father-son discipleship and a fall off of fatherhood and manhood and family integration and all the rest. So we think that if you want to do something about reforming the socioeconomic system, you ought to reform the social system and the economic system at the same time by recovering the family economy. I mean, what a great concept. And friends, lately we've been talking about why the large corporate systems are hurting, and they're going to have a hard time continuing. It's going to be hard for your average everyday father, especially Christian fathers, to continue in some of the large corporations for a lot of reasons. The large corporate systems with 50 plus employees are going to be tied into Obamacare starting in 2014. And you know, that's going to be a major financial hit for the companies. The average family of four or five is going to cost about $20,000 in medical insurance premiums. That could go as high as $25,000. The IRS average number right now is estimated to be about $20,000, and that's far, far more than it is right now, which means that the economy is going to really struggle as this government-imposed medical system is being imposed on the free market, quote-unquote free market system. And friends, that's going to hurt. That's going to hurt the large corporations, so that's going to encourage, I think, the smaller corporations with less than 50 employees that will not be so bound to Obamacare or have to pay the huge penalties to exempt themselves from the Obamacare mandated insurance program. So all I'm saying is come 2014, man, you're going to look at a lot more entrepreneurs and people wanting to be part of smaller companies with less than 50 employees. Plus, I think there's going to be a lot of Christians out there not all that pleased about being part of an insurance program that funds abortions and abortion fated patients and so forth. So you're going to see that Christian-run businesses are going to want to be a little more decentralized in the years to come. Moreover, Christians will be forced, I think, in companies, lots of these big companies in the future, to do things that oppose their conscience. Some corporations right now are actually having their employees sign documents that endorse homosexual behavior. I've heard several instances of that happen here in this state over the last year or two, and I think that's just going to happen more and more over the next 10 to 15 years, which again will drive the small companies and the entrepreneurial endeavors and, of course, encourage the family economic conferences, which are starting to burgeon. We're really packing out our conferences these days, my friends. We have a conference coming up in St. Louis, Missouri in May, and another conference over on the West Coast in Washington State in October. Well, for right now, we're going to take a look at family-based economies and entrepreneurism for just a moment on this edition of the program. Dave Tucker joins us again. He will be a speaker at the Family Economics Conference in St. Louis come May 10th through 12th here just in about 4 to 5 weeks. Dave Tucker joins us again. He represents the service industry and has had his own businesses for a number of years. He's got a new book out, really excellent, very, very practical book called Lawn Maintenance and the Beautiful Business. Hey, Dave, welcome back to the program.
Well, thank you very much, Kevin. It's a pleasure to be here.
Man, you know, you've had a number of businesses yourself. You've been somewhat successful by God's grace. Why don't you just give us a snapshot of what happened? I mean, how did God bless you in developing these businesses?
Yeah, well, I do have a number of them, and they seem very, very different. And at the same time, they're all sort of related. God has been very good to us, meaning my wife and I. When we came up in 1986, we basically had nothing but a car payment. And today we have, I count them as three businesses. People could count it differently, but mainly I have a software business. We write business management software for landscapers, mainly for lawn maintenance companies. And we have a lawn maintenance company also, and then I also have some real estate investment-type property, so a real estate company of sorts. And all those three came out of the fact that when I came to the United States, I had been trained as a missionary, and I had been a missionary in Mexico for a few years, didn't know what I was going to do, and my brother-in-law said, well, why don't you come here and mow lawns for me, because he had a lawn maintenance company. And from that, I had taught myself to program, so we ended up selling it. I ended up starting another lawn maintenance business, et cetera, and so forth, and here I am.
Dave, you heard my intro. What do you think about the future? I mean, do you think I'm anywhere near accurate in saying that I think Christians are going to want to move more towards the smaller companies and entrepreneurial endeavors?
Yes, I think you are accurate, and I it's interesting to hear you. You've developed it farther than I have, but I had the same things, and a lot of that has to do with, and I start that, and it's one of the reasons why I like to have a business is you can control the culture. There's so many things that you can control if you own your own business. If it's a small business, there's a little bit of risk, but there's a lot more control that you have. So these sorts of things, like we've seen some coffee companies that say, if you don't agree with us and our view of homosexual marriage, we don't want your business. That sort of stuff is coming out. Well, that doesn't affect you if you own your own business, but if you work there or if you or somehow you're tied to them, then it does. And the more independent we can be, the better off we're going to be able to make our own culture and create our own environment that we want to be in.
Dave, I have heard stories about, you know, good Christian brothers who just in good conscience could not sign the ethics statement issued by the head office of their large corporate business. And, you know, if that be the case in the year, 2011, what's it going to look like in the year 2016 or 2018? The spirit of the age is moving more and more towards, clamping down on Christian values. And I think that's just going to press more and more Christians into what you're talking about here. That's why your book, I think, is so important, Dave. I just got a chance to read about 25% of it before we came on air here. Lawn Maintenance and the Beautiful Business is the name of the book. It's coming out in just about, 5-6 weeks, right?
That's right. That's right. Yeah. And that's why we developed it, was the idea that there, I mean, it sort of started with you. You're the reason that this book exists,
oh,
Kevin.
Oh boy.
You got me to teach at the family economics and a number of families. I know of at least five families that started lawn maintenance businesses because they did that, because they heard what we had to say. And I thought, I really need to give them something, a step-by-step, a start-to-finish type of situation where they can see it easily, they can go back, they can refer to it, and they can start their own and involve their own family. And I think that within 3 to 5 years, they can have a business, a beautiful business that I define as being one that pretty much runs itself.
Yeah. And let me be clear, friends. I mean, you don't have to be focused on lawn maintenance to get this book. I'm telling you, this is a practical, hands-on book for building any business. It doesn't just have to be the lawn maintenance business. As I was reading it, I'm reading your stories, Dave. I'm thinking, this is so practical. I haven't seen anything quite like this in a long time. And I'd say, if it doesn't matter what you're going to do, if you just walk through this book by Dave Tucker on lawn maintenance and the beautiful business, you're gonna get a feel for how to build any business, especially a service industry oriented business. And Dave, you talked a little bit about why it's important to own the business. You start out your book with that, and you have about three or four reasons, as I recall. One of them was, you can establish your own culture. Praise God. There's some freedom there. Any other reason why someone might want to start their own business?
You can control your own culture. You have time opportunities is the other thing I talk about, which means if you work in some place where you're punching in and punching out, when you go home at night, there's not a lot you can do that's going to make it more valuable. The whole point is, how productive can you be? Yeah. How much value can you produce? And the more value you can produce, the better off you're going to be with making money and mm-hmm. supporting your family.
And you just told me off air, Dave, that this missionary down in Mexico said, hey, need a little help down here. You jumped on a plane, flew down there just out of the blue, and you visited with him, and you were a huge encouragement, and you're helping him with some of the ministry down there. And you just couldn't do that out of the blue, if you were working for some big corporation, you probably have to submit your request for vacation, you know, 3 months earlier, and you just don't have the flexibility to do what you can do.
That's absolutely true. And when you have that, when you're in this type of situation, and our family, Kevin, is all about flexibility. I don't know if it's something that I go after, but
yeah,
we homeschool our kids and I own my own business, which gives me the opportunity to just pick up the whole family and say, hey, let's go.
Yeah.
And we can go and do stuff like that. So that is very helpful. I'm going down to one, in April down to Mexico, and I'm able to do that because this business exists and what it can do for me.
Right. Right. Okay. Other reasons why somebody wants to start their own business.
Yeah, another one is involvement of children. Involvement of children is huge. Up until this point, there aren't a lot of laws on child labor if they're your own kids, which means I can bring them in as early as I want to, and I can sit them here even if in the case of a single mom or something, she can start her own business, and that's a way for her to have her kids around and still be able to produce something. But mainly for me and my family, it's been bringing my kids in, teaching them how to work, giving them practical experience, taking the fear out of it, because you get them to talk to customers, you get them to make phone calls, you get them to be with you when you're going to present yourself to somebody, and get them in on meetings. And by the time both of my two older kids both majored in business, they had double majors, business and marketing, business and finance. Mm-hmm. But they came back and they're like, hey, Dad, all this stuff about business, we pretty much know it from just being around.
We've been doing this.
We've been looking at balance sheets and P&Ls and all these other things this whole time. Mm-hmm. Whereas a lot of other kids in the class are like, what? What is this? Yeah. So the involvement of your children is a reason to have your own business.
Mm-hmm. Okay. How about last reason?
Your last reason is the continuity. You have something that you can give. Right now, I work in my office. I'm able to hire my son, so I get to work with him every single day. Mm-hmm. I have my daughter, Charity, is working with me as well, working on this book, helping me through that. I'm able to involve her. My daughter, Cherish, is going to be working with us. And my son-in-law, or my future son-in-law, Stephen, is also going to be working here. Wow. And it's just, you get to pick the people that you're going to work with, and you can create something that's going to be long-lasting and gives them opportunities where they don't have to go through this. So somebody in the generations, if you look at yourself as a family tree, somebody in your generations is going to have to take the plunge and say, I'm going independent, I'm going to do it, and then that will make it so much easier for everybody else. So who is going to make that stand? Either you or one of your kids? No, take it on yourself. Yep. Do it yourself.
And Dave, one of the unique things about the service industry is it opens itself up to a decentralized system. You know, you could be a small mom and pop and do this form of service or that form of service. Service industry is a lot easier than the product industry, you know, where you got to manufacture 100 million widgets of some sort. So much easier to start, you know, from the bottom up doing service, isn't it?
Absolutely. There's so little investment. That's one of the neat things about lawn maintenance, but it can be lots of different services. You can do house cleaning, you can do windows, window washing, you can do any one of these. Is basically you started up with just a few dollars. We're talking $100. In fact, one of the chapters in my book is what if I can't drive? And it's for helping these 10, 11, 12-year-olds start their own business when they have nothing. And I lay out a whole strategy of if you have zero and you want to start, this is how you start. And these kind of service industries where, as like you said, the software, which is one of my other businesses, it would probably cost me more than $1 million to create the software, and that's not even talking about marketing it yet. Mm-hmm. So a product-based business is very hard to get into. It's very hard to just launch yourself into it, but a service industry is. And so you look at a service industry, maybe it's not what you ultimately want to be in, but the service industry can lead you creating a beautiful business. It can then free you up both time-wise and money-wise to then create the product that you really want to do.
I guess, you know, the question of am I the right guy to be doing this is a question a lot of people ask. But when it comes to something kind of simple and basic, like lawn maintenance, just about any young man could start out with that business and really not worry about if it's a precise fit for him or not. It seems to me there are some businesses that are so generic that you don't have to sit there and toss and turn and wonder whether you're the guy or not, especially if you have nothing else going on in your life, you know.
If it's either that or Xbox.
Yeah, right, exactly.
But yeah, these kids have to grow up, and this is one way to do it. But you're right, this can fit anybody.
Yeah.
And if it launches, the other thing is you're not committed to it. It's not like a building or something like that where you've got it, or these people that go through med school and then decide they don't want to be a doctor at the end, and they have all these school loans. I mean, this is something you could create 1 year, you could run it for 3 years, and you could shut it down if you wanted to. And it's when you're in those service businesses, that's you can. It's pluses and minuses, but the pluses are something that you get your feet in business. There's not a lot of commitment, particularly for a young person. For an older person who's leaving his job to do this, well, that's another story. Mm-hmm. Although you can even start it part-time and then work it into, once you see it producing, it can produce a good full-time income.
You know, as you start the business, you got to start out with some capital investment and such, typically some purchase of equipment. So let's just kind of work through some of these issues piece by piece. You're starting out day one, you're picking your equipment, you're going to start laying out your plan for doing the service. And we'll take lawn maintenance because that's what you're good at. How do you make your decisions concerning those initial capital investments?
Well, we have a chapter on it, but so I will refer you back to the book. But also, it's pretty simple. You can, the best place to go is someplace like Craigslist or eBay, where you pick out a used piece of equipment. And in the case of a lawn maintenance company, I would say you pick up a 36-inch walk-behind mower. If you can get the hydro, that's good. If you can't, you get belt-driven. Now, some of that stuff doesn't mean much to anybody, but if you start looking around, you'll see exactly what I mean.
What about this?
And we explain it, piece by piece.
What about used equipment? I mean, is that a risk to buy a piece of used equipment, especially if you're paying some decent money for it?
Well, it depends on... A lot of it depends on how much capital you have. If you're flush and you want to spend a lawnmower like I just described, brand new is going to cost about $3,600, somewhere around there.
Uh-huh.
A used one you could pick up for probably a pretty good used one would be $800 to $900.
Okay.
So one is, are you flush? Two is, do you know anything about mechanics? Because if you don't know anything about mechanics, then, maybe you need a new one. But if you do know something about mechanics, then let's get the used one. Let's say the engine blows on you. Well, that's $600 for a new engine, and you're back in business.
Yeah.
Not really a big deal. You're still way under the $3,600. These machines are meant to go day and night and nonstop. They're way different than the Lawn Boy or the little one that you get from Home Depot.
Mm-hmm.
But so that would be one investment. And then you would probably invest $200 in a nice trimmer, and you would invest another $150 in a blower.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can drive, you'd invest probably $500 or $600 in a trailer, and you're set. You're ready to go.
Wow.
You put in a couple $100 in flyers, and we give you the flyers right there in the book and what they're supposed to look like and everything else and what has worked for us. And you're out and working. And in fact, you could have it up and going within a week.
This works perfectly, Dave, for our vision for businesses in a box. I don't know if you've heard us talk about that. We want to get as many businesses in a box together as possible. And I think your book pretty much idealizes this concept. We want to have like a turnkey system where you just, you read a book and you get started. I mean, obviously nothing is going to guarantee your success except, God's grace and your diligence, You're going to need that too,
That's
but,
right.
but it's nice to have a good book, to lay out some of the requirements and some of the wisdom necessary to start that thing. Okay. How about marketing? Cause I know marketing is something that everybody's afraid of. Why do you think that's the case? Why is that the case?
Well, you're afraid of it. A lot of it is because you don't know and you haven't tried it. But marketing is, and I lose the fear of marketing when I just think of, I have a good service that I want to offer. Somebody else wants me to do this service for them, and they're happy to give me money. So if you look at a business in its very essence, you will see that a business organizes people that want a service and are willing to pay for it with people that are willing to work for money and do this service for them, and the business is only supposed to put the two of them together. So that's really all you're doing. So when it comes to marketing, all I want to do is make sure that people know that I have a product or a service that I have service to offer, and let me know if you want it. And one of the great ways that we came up with on doing this was we have the $20 special. And what that means is we'll do door hangers and we'll hang them on there, and it says your first cut is $20. Mm-hmm. What that gives us an opportunity on the part of the customer, he thinks, well, I'm not wasting your time. Maybe I do. Maybe that's the price of a couple of pizzas. So let me get my lawn mowed for me. Let's see what it is. They get to test you out, see how good you are. You get to actually mow the grass. You know how long it's going to take. You know whether they have a lot of obstacles. You know whether they have a lot of dog leftovers in the back. You know whether you know all these things because you're actually doing the job once. Yeah, you walk away with $20. It's not a lot of money, but it's better than having to do 10 or 15 or 20 of these free estimates and you get nothing for it.
Right.
And so you already created this relationship. It's a very low pressure relationship that you've created with this customer. And we found that for every, and this holds pretty true, for every 1,000 of these flyers that you put up, you end up with 2 to 4 long-term customers that will hire you time after time.
Dave, you have a really interesting story, a good story on marketing in your chapter on marketing about the Boy Scouts trying to sell those candles. Do you remember that story?
Oh, really? Yeah. Good.
Why don't you tell that for a second?
Yeah, well, it's so great. I forget exactly where I heard this story, but it was the Boy Scout troop has to raise funds for whatever they're going to go out or something, and they give everybody candles, and they say you have to go door to door and you have to sell these candles for $20. Well, this little boy who's kind of creative and kind of thinks out of the box, he goes to the first one, he says, do you want to buy this candle for $20, trying to raise money, et cetera. Guy turns to him and says, are you kidding me? I'm not going to buy that candle for $20. It's not worth it. He goes to the next one. Same thing happens. By the third one, he's kind of discouraged, and he says, I got to change this. So he changed his marketing ploy. He changed his pattern, and he says to him, I'm raising money for the Boy Scout trip, et cetera. If you give me a donation of $20, I will give you this candle. And lo and behold, he started selling them. And at the end of the day, most kids had sold 10 or 15 that they forced on their relatives. And this guy was in the thousands. He had sold something like 1,200 candles during that same period of time.
Uh-huh.
And he did that because he changed the whole mentality. The mentality wasn't, I'm trying to sell you this $5 candle for $20. I think you're stupid, basically.
Yeah.
The mentality was, I know this is a donation. We both know it's a donation. Do you want to give it to me? And if you do, then here's a candle for your labor. And it's just way different. Treat your customers with respect and intelligence. Don't treat them dumbly.
Be honest. Be honest. And you want to appeal to what they want to do. I mean, what they want, the service they want, or the amount of money that they're going to want to pay for the product. If you bring in a product that's not worth it, and prima facie, they can tell it's not worth it, they're not going to be interested in doing business with you.
No. And you're not going to get that. One of my favorite proverbs is a good name is worth far above rubies. And you have to have a good name out there. You have to have a good name. It's got to be straightforward. It's got to be easy. It says, I do this service and I do it well and I get paid for it. And you're happy that you're my customer. That's it. And anything that takes away from that good name is going to kill you in the long run.
One of the best chapters in the book, Dave, I have to tell you, is your chapter on metrics. Really, really important. And I know that metrics are important, but why? Why is it important to measure what you're doing in your business?
Well, first off, if you don't measure it, it's you have no idea what's going on in your business. I look at businesses quite often like a submarine captain. Mm-hmm. Submarines don't have any windows. And so the submarine, all he can do is listen to the outside and plot things and measure it and know that I traveled this fast in this direction and this is probably where I am type of thing. And that's the way it is with a business. If you don't measure it, if you don't know what's going on in your business, and the thing is, it's so easy to measure this kind of stuff, but if you don't measure it, then you end up falling by the wayside. You end up losing a lot of time, a lot of effort, and putting a lot of money into it. And I talk about the situation where we measure. Everything comes down to how much money do you make per man per hour. And the reason it comes down to that is because if you think about it, you can make a lot of money, but if it takes 1,000 years to do it, it doesn't really matter. anymore. So everything has to do with how much money are you making per hour that you work there. And we found by measuring this stuff that we can find customers where we make $45 per man per hour and other customers that were making $20 per man per hour. Now, the cost for each house or each property might be very different, but the fact of the matter is we're making so much less per man per hour on this one that we end up actually leaving money on the lawn as we do it. We would be better off not even doing that lawn than doing it for the price that we're getting. And when that becomes so stark that you see the differences in your company as the profitability, and it's astounding. It's astounding.
Mm. What are you looking for in a service industry? I mean, what do you measure? Do you measure the quantities or the qualities, and how do you measure the qualities?
Well, the quality is definitely the harder one to measure on your quality. But we do measure it. We measure every complaint, every compliment. Okay. We measure how many hours everybody's putting in. We measure how many hours every property is taking. We measure the satisfaction rating from our customers. We have customer surveys that come back to us. We measure all these things. And part of it is I'm a firm believer that if you measure it, it will get better.
Yeah, I agree.
And if you think about that with anything, mm-hmm. if I step on the scale every day, I'm probably going to lose weight if that's what I want to do. But if I stay away from that scale, then I'm probably going to gain weight. Mm-hmm. And that it's just that easy. So yeah. If you measure it, it will get better.
That's
so
good.
Measure everything. We measure the productivity of each machine so we know which machines produce more than other machines.
You know, one of the most important things I know in the service industry is quality and customer satisfaction. I mean, it's obvious, you know, nobody needs to argue that point, but a lot of people do the schlocky work. A lot of people aren't willing to continue to hone and hone and hone to provide their customers the very best service. Why is that? Is that a character issue?
Yeah, it's a character issue. They're looking for that quick buck at the beginning, which in your books on Proverbs talk a lot about that.
Yeah.
But they're looking for that quick buck at the beginning instead of the long-term gains. Mm-hmm. I was listening to a financial DVD, and he stressed that the tortoise in the story of the tortoise and the hare, the tortoise always wins.
Yeah.
You can read it 20 times and the tortoise will always win.
Oh, yeah.
And it's that wealth that's made by diligent work is the one that's going to stick around. And you're going to find that with those companies too. The companies that do shoddy work, they get a bad name. Mm-hmm. They get a name of sloppiness, and that's the best they can do. And they never really prosper.
What do clients look for in service? I mean, you've been in this business a long time. I know it's mainly the lawn maintenance business, but I'm sure this applies to a lot of other service industries. What are they looking for?
Well, I'd say there's three levels of satisfaction that you're looking at, that a client is looking for. The first level is sort of they're gonna be after you to try to get it done. It's that shoddy work that you're talking about, and they're like, "Oh, I call you back. Come on, get this done right. Do it right." The second level would be something there where you become sort of invisible to them, and you get the job done, and they're satisfied with it. And so they're satisfied with the job. Yes, the lawn is getting cut, or the windows are being washed, or the house is being cleaned. But the third one, which is the one that we strive for, is the delight. So they either, in the three of them, they either notice you negatively, or they don't notice you at all, or the third one, they notice you and they're delighted. And what we try to instill in our own employees and in the way any business that I own, I'm trying to do is I want my customers to actually be extremely pleased. So we try to do one special thing when we're out there. Every couple times that we're out servicing their property, we'll do something special. We'll trim or edge extra special, or pull those weeds that are next to the door, or do something so that then the customer comes back, they say, "Wow, you went over and above. You did something extra." And it's just a little thing. It's not much, but it's that delight that we're looking for, because delight creates loyalty. And when you have customers that are loyal to you as a lawn maintenance guy, and they're loyal to you and they're recommending you to your friends, well, that's when you know that God is blessing your effort.
And it's a perfect incarnation of the biblical principle, love your neighbor as yourself. And whatsoever you do, do it heartily as unto the Lord. You know, obviously Christians really absolutely need to be the people most on their game, providing the absolute highest level of quality of anybody out there. I mean, this is the Christ we work for. We ought to at least shine that in front of others in the business world. And I think that's really the message today on the Generations broadcast as we talk about Dave Tucker's book, Lawn Maintenance and the Beautiful Business. A wonderful book, friends, not quite out. It's going to be out, hopefully, Lord willing, at the Family Economics Conference come May of 2013, just coming up here in about 5 weeks. Dave, we're looking forward to the conference and you coming out and doing a few talks.
Well, I'm really looking forward to it and already preparing what I'm going to be talking about. And I just hope to be helpful to a lot of different families. If they want this for their family, then I hope that I can be a key or at least a small part of that effort.
I really get the sense, Dave, that we're doing something important for the future. I mean, I've opened the program saying that this is really the direction we're headed towards, a decentralization of business and family economies. And I'm hoping, you know, by God's grace, he will use these tiny little tools, these little efforts on your part and my part and everybody else's part in the family economics area to accomplish this end. So thank you for all you're doing, and we'll look forward to seeing you in May.
Okay, thank you, and we'll see you there.
And again, friends, to register for the Family Economics Conference, and we are filling up fast. So if you want to hit that next deadline for early registration, it's coming up, I believe, on March 30th. So sign up right now at familyeconomics.com. That's familyeconomics.com. We're very excited about what God's doing with this wonderful movement that's burgeoning around the country. Again, not new in the history of the world, but we're certainly bringing this thing back in the 21st century. It's familyeconomics.com for more information and for registration. This is Kevin Swanson inviting you back again next time as we continue to lay down a vision for the next generation.
It's that time again to mark your calendars and plan to attend this year's Homeschool Day at the Capitol in Denver, Colorado, occurring April 12th. Come hear Rick Boyer and his son Rick Jr. as they speak on godly government, America's need for reformation, as well as a new class on political activism. Events include the Liberty Celebration, the annual march around the Capitol, and the noon rally on the West Steps. For more information or to register, go online to check.org. That's check.org.